I'm Julia Paskin. Join me as I talk with NPR's Sarah McCammon about her new book, The Ex-Evangelicals, Loving, Living, and Leaving the White Evangelical Church. That's April 25th at the Crawford. Tickets at las.com/events.
You're listening to Where Talk on KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle. Coming up a little bit later, the shakiness of our memories, things that we may even be absolutely certain that we experienced in a certain way, can often be very different. I know that's certainly true for me, and we're going to talk about research into quantifying that and understanding why our memories are so unreliable. That's coming up later this hour. But right now, we turn our attention to how colleges and universities are looking at reopening dorms, looking at reopening their campuses in the fall, and whether they will require vaccination of students and faculty as a precondition to allowing people back onto campus. Joining us to talk about what the California State University system is planning to do is Lolo Hong, Associate Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs and Enrollment Management for the California State University. Chancellor Hong, thank you very much for being with us. At this point, where are you on the potential requirement for vaccination?
Hi, Larry. Good morning, and thanks for having us on to talk about our plans for fall 2021. At this time, given the fact that all three available vaccines have only been approved for emergency use authorization, we are not intending at this moment to require students receive a COVID-19 vaccine in order to be enrolled or to participate in instruction and programs for fall 2021.
What
we need to monitor the public health situation, and certainly will review and adjust as needed. But at this point, we're continuing forward with our efforts to repopulate our campuses under that assumption.
And I know that the majority of your students are commuter students, but for those campuses with a sizable dormitory population, those living on campus, are you considering that requirement for those who are in that kind of a congregate living situation?
Larry, that's a great point, and I think it's important to emphasize, as you know, we are 23 campuses spanning across the entire state, north to south, 800 miles. And so there's great diversity in how our campuses are structured, as you mentioned, the number of students who are commuting versus living on campus. And then also our campuses are working closely with their local public health department. So those realities are also different, responsive to the reality of the pandemic in each of those counties. So yes, for some of our campuses who in particular are wanting to be able to redensify their residential life programs a little bit more extensively, they are considering the possibility of requiring vaccination, more rigorous testing, things like that. We're also looking at right now, our student athletes on our 22 campuses that host intercollegiate athletics, historically there are greater degrees of immunization requirements for student athletes. So certainly that's another special population that our campuses are considering. But the practices will vary and it won't be consistent across the board. And we really honor that there are unique contexts on each of our 23 campuses. So there will be different decisions made.
And I assume that they are beholden to the county public health authorities at each of those campuses. Is that right?
Yes, we've encouraged and really strongly emphasized the need to collaborate and communicate on a regular basis and do so closely with the local public health officers so that they are getting up-to-date, timely information about what we know in terms of mitigating the risk of COVID-19 transmission for our students.
Chancellor Hong, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it very much and wish you all the best as students return to campus in the fall. I'm sure it's going to be very exciting for you to see them back.
We're very excited, so thank you.
All right. That's Lolo Hong, who's Associate Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs and Enrollment Management for the California State University, to talk with us about the legal issue raised by schools that do require or are considering requiring that students and faculty be vaccinated is Dorit Rice, Professor of Law at UC Hastings in San Francisco, and she has expertise in vaccine law and policy and is a member of the Vaccine Working Group on Ethics and Policy, an independent nonprofit project. Professor Rice, thank you very much. It's good to have you with us this morning.
Hello.
Hi, Professor Rice. So what are the legal issues or complexities that are raised by the fact that the three vaccines here in California are approved only for emergency use? They don't have full FDA approval. We know that schools, for example, can require students get vaccinated before they come to campus. There's even state law in California. But does that apply when you're talking about an emergency authorization?
The short answer is that it's not quite clear. The emergency use authorization for a vaccine for the whole population is a new situation that has never come up before. I think there are very good reasons to say that, yes, they can mandate, but I'll start by setting out the case of people who say that's illegal. They make two arguments. First, they say the EUA law has a section that says that the secretary is required to let recipients of the vaccine, let people getting the vaccine, know that they can accept or refuse the vaccine. So if you can accept or refuse, that means no mandates. The other argument they make is because the vaccine is still authorized and not approved, it's experimental, and you can't require people to take an experimental vaccine. I think both arguments are not very good, and here's why. First, while the law tells the secretary to let people know that they can accept or refuse, it also mentions that there may be consequences. And more importantly, it talks only to the secretary, not to employers, not to states, not to universities. On the background of a situation where for decades universities could require vaccines, saying that the law in silence is completely changing that and prohibiting them from requiring a vaccine is saying a lot, and it's not in the law. The other part, the experimental part, it may be more convincing at the point where we have very limited data on the vaccine, but right now the vaccines have been given to tens of millions of people safely and have gone through trials that are as big as any licensed vaccine. Saying at this point they're so experimental that you can't require people to get them to when you're going to a shared environment and interacting with others is saying a lot.
We're talking with legal scholar Dorit Rice, professor at UC Hastings School of Law. At this point, there are at least five U.S. colleges that have announced plans to require students be fully vaccinated before returning to campus in the fall. They are Cornell University, Rutgers University, Fort Lewis College, Nova Southeastern University, and St. Edward's University. So those are the five at this point, at least, that are going to be requiring. We don't have word that any California colleges or universities have yet decided to require vaccinations for either their student or their faculty. Also joining us is Robert Turner Schooley, who's infectious disease specialist and co-lead of UC San Diego's COVID-19 management program. Thank you very much, sir, for being with us. We appreciate it. What do you think should be the most important factors considering from a medical standpoint with schools looking at this question?
Well, these vaccines are actually incredibly effective. If you'd asked me a year ago whether we'd be where we are now with these vaccines, I would have said, boy, that would be great, but it would be a stretch. We have vaccines that essentially 100% effective in preventing people from going into the hospital and dying, and 95% effective in preventing people from becoming ill. So these are incredibly good vaccines, and the side effect profile is really extremely acceptable as well. So this is one of the best vaccines we have for one of the more serious diseases we've had. And from the medical perspective, it's very hard to imagine why anyone would not want this vaccine.
Well, there are people concerned that there may be things down the road that we would not be aware of, problems that could develop 10, even 20 years, you know, later in life for people that simply would not show up in clinical trials of this length, or even the months that we've had now since the widespread introduction of the vaccine. What do you say to those who have that resistance?
Well, we actually have a very good knowledge of what happens when people aren't vaccinated. We've just gone through 550,000 deaths in the United States. And so if there is a way down the road rare side effect of this, I'm certainly willing to understand that can be true whenever anything is introduced into medical use. But the counterbalancing factor is this is a deadly disease. And I think that from what we know about similar vaccines and similar technologies, this is not one that I think a time bomb is really likely enough to weigh into people's thinking about whether they should be vaccinated and protect themselves and their families.
And, of course, there is the challenge of proving vaccination because, at least at this point, it would seem any proof that could be offered would be very easily counterfeited. Do you have any ideas in the working group that you've got and sort of how to deal with that potential?
Well, you know, we've had 10,000 students here at UC San Diego all year and have done quite well. And we've been offering vaccination to them already and had a fair number vaccinated because they're also teaching, which is one of the subgroups available to whom the vaccination has been available for some time. So for many of them, we'll have our own records. They were vaccinated by us. We expect that others will get vaccinated elsewhere. And I don't really see, you know, how people are what benefit it has to counterfeit a vaccine card. They're at risk for getting infected if they're not wearing masks. And it just, to me, seems like a possible scenario, but something that we should plan around and assume that most people will be honest about this and will want to be part of the community of what colleges are. You know, we all have to think about working together, and we're a community, and we all have to take part.
Well, and have you encountered students who've, you know, argued back, well, even if I get it, the odds are it's going to be fairly mild. I'll be sick for a few days and over it. It's really older people who are the ones, or people with underlying conditions. It's not vital for young people. And I don't know if you've faced that argument, but what's your response to that?
Well, I've heard the argument, but we have two people in our hospital now under the age of 25 who are in the hospital with COVID. So it's not, you know, when you get enough people infected with the disease in which some of them do get sick, even though the number is low, you end up with some of them getting sick. So that, if you're going to get COVID, it's better to do it when you're 20 than when you're 70. But 20-year-olds do get sick and die. And there's no reason to need to play that roulette with something as effective as the vaccine we have.
Robert Turner Schooley with us, infectious disease specialist and the co-lead of UC San Diego's COVID-19 management program. Let me go back to UC Hastings law professor Dorit Rice. We have a listener who asks about whether there's any distinction in this requirement between a public or private college and university. Does that change at all the legal issues involved in requiring vaccination?
To some degree, a public university is subject to constitutional provisions that protect rights. You don't have constitutional rights against a private university, but you do against a public one. This can come in two ways. First, you can challenge a public university saying this violates my freedom. The standard is very permissive towards a public university when it's public health. They have quite a bit of discretion, but there's still the challenge if they go too far in limiting your rights. And the other part it may come in is in religion. If someone claims the vaccine is against my religion, a public university may be challenged on violating the First Amendment. Right now, under our current jurisprudence, universities don't have to give a religious exemption from a vaccine requirement. Some of them do. Rutgers did. But they don't have to. But the Supreme Court has already signaled that it's moving towards more protection of freedom of religion, and it's not clear how far they'll go. So possibly down the line, the Supreme Court may require more. They don't require it right now, though.
All right. I want to thank you both for being with us. We appreciate it. That's Professor UC Hastings Law School Dorit Rice, a member of the Vaccine Working Group on Ethics and Policy. Our thanks to Dr. Robert Turner Schooley as well, UC San Diego COVID-19 Management Program. And joining us as well, Lolo Hong, Associate Vice Chancellor for the California State University. Coming up on Air Talk in just 1 minute, the malleability of our memories. Why are they so unreliable? How can they seemingly be so different? Siblings will completely disagree on how the same event that they were there in the same space at the same time, how that unfolded. You have completely different memories. How does that happen? We'll find out when we come back in just 90 seconds.
Support comes from Ciclavia, catalyzing vibrant public spaces, active transportation, and good health through car-free streets. Ciclavia promotes respect and infrastructure for bike and pedestrian-friendly public spaces. Enjoy these pop-up parks for the day in your favorite people-powered way. Jogging, biking, skating, strolling, or simply spectating. Free and open to all, Ciclavia Sundays generate miles of smiles in neighborhoods all over L.A. Details at www.ciclavia.org.